Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on List.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
Listen to KMOX anytime, anywhere. Download the Radio.com app today.
I have a confession. I'm addicted to the news.
You know I'm totally off script right now.
Journalism is cool again, and you have endless content, let's be honest.
And this is how I got elected, by being off script.
Now, Mark Reardon.
I've seen people almost go to the bathroom in their pants in his presence.
On St. Louis's News Radio, KMOX.
Well, I start the afternoon, ladies and gentlemen, and a new week, and the week that we celebrate the nation's independence. Or can we do that? Can we even celebrate that, a bunch of slaveholders? I don't think we can. I think we need to take a step back and realize how awful this country is and join in a chorus of hate, like many of the protesters. But I am glad that Mayor Crewson's flowers were untrampled. Kevin Killeen just reported on that. I was waiting on word of the flowers, and I finally got it. So our buddy Al Watkins, who is an attorney, he's been in the news. He's a very flamboyant attorney. I saw Al at the car wash a few months ago. He's a funny guy. He keeps me entertained. He looks a little like Jeff Goldblum. He's representing Mark McCloskey and Patricia McCloskey. They are the two gun-toting liberal Democrats from the Central West End that have gone national in response to the protests near the mayor's house. And Mr. Watkins said both Mr. and Mrs. McCloskey are lawyers whose professional careers have punctuated by their longstanding commitment to protecting the civil rights of clients victimized at the hands of law enforcement. This commitment of time and resources to this cause continues today in the Isaiah Foreman case. And we'll get to that case here in just a moment. I'll mention what the McCloskeys or McCloskeys have to say. Ann Allred from Channel 5 did an interview, and I want to play some of that audio. But as we start here this afternoon, you know, one of the things I tweeted out earlier, you've probably seen some of the video of the protest at the St. Louis statue on Saturday. And while the McCloskeys are making national news, I think some people, including me, are asking, why can't we get some video on CNN or some of the other sources of what happened Saturday afternoon at the St. Louis statue? Because people got the, you know, in some cases got the snot beat out of them. Now, what I think we have here, honestly, as I get to the rest of these stories this afternoon, you have an example of both of these stories are not the complete picture, okay? Bill Hennessy, one of the co-sponsors of that protest at the St. Louis statue, the Catholic protest, he's going to join us a little later this afternoon. But in that case, there were some right-wing radicals there as well, called the Proud Boys. So some bad things happened. And then in the McCloskey's case, look, the optics look terrible, okay? They really do. And the one thing that I would say about this, and I'll apologize to Ann Allred if she asked this question. It might not have made the cut. And I went through the interview quickly. But they were not handling the guns very safely, okay? Safety first. Took my 5-year-old daughter to deer camp last year. Safety, safety, safety. They are pointing the guns at people. And at one point, it looks like Mr. McCloskey is pointing his rifle right at his wife's head. Now, that could have been the angle of the picture. But I want you to hear their explanation for what happened. And again, the optics might not look good, but put yourself in the position of this couple. You got a bunch of people. It's private property. They broke down a gate. At least that's the allegation. And they're coming toward you. You don't know what's going on. You certainly don't have police there to protect you at that moment. So I'm going to play a portion of Ann's interview here with Mr. McCloskey. And this one's a little long as we get started here. He sort of explains what happened.
We came back to the house I don't know what time it is. I've been up ever since, so I'm a little blurry. We were preparing dinner. We went out to the East Patio, an open porch that faces Kings Highway on one side and Portland Place Drive on the south. And we're sitting down for dinner. We heard all this stuff going on down in Maryland Plaza. And then the mob started to move up Kings Highway. When it got parallel with the Kings Highway gate on Portland Place, somebody forced the gate. And I stood up and announced that this is private property, go back. I can't remember in detail anymore. I went inside, I got a rifle. Because as soon as I said this is private property, those words enraged the crowd. And absolute horde came through the now smashed down gates, coming right at the house. I mean, my house, my east patio was 40 feet from Portland Place Drive, and these people were right up in my face, scared to death. And then I stood out there. The only thing we said is, this is private property. Go back, private property, leave now. At that point, everybody got enraged. There were people wearing body armor. One person pulled out some loaded pistol magazines and clicked them together and said, you're next. We're threatened with our lives, threatened with a house being burned down, my office building being burned down, even our dog's life being threatened. It was about as bad as it can get. I mean, and I really thought it was storming the Bastille, that we would be dead and the house would be burned, and there was nothing we could do about it. It was a huge and frightening crowd, and they broke in the gate and were coming at us.
So what you don't have in the storytelling is that other side of the story, because you don't have images, video, audio of that. I'm not saying it didn't happen. I think we have reason to believe it did happen. Bill Greenblatt, who is a friend and he's a photographer for UPI, he was down there. He's the one who took many of those pictures that you're seeing in the news. And his statement with Rennie Knott, I think Rennie had a conversation with him, was that he thought that most of it was peaceful. But you don't know exactly what happened in the moments leading up to these two grabbing the guns. So the issue of private property, this is Mark McCloskey, were they on private property?
Everything inside the Portland Place gate is private property. There's nothing public in Portland Place. Being inside that gate is like being in my living room. There is no public anything in Portland Place. It is all private property. And you got to appreciate that if there are 200 or 300 people, I don't know how many there were, we were told that 500 people showed up at the Lida Cruson's house, which is not on our street, as you know. How many of them came through Portland Place, I don't know. But it was a big crowd, and they were aggressive, wearing body armor, and screaming at us and threatening to harm us and how they were going to be living in our house after they killed us.
So, you know, one of the things that we're seeing here, not a shock, is a complete double standard. I pointed this out to you with the news coverage of the Chop Zone in Seattle, where another person has died, by the way, and the police still aren't in there. It's a national embarrassment, and certainly embarrassment for Seattle and that mayor there. But in that case, you had armed people who were protesters walking around with ARs, and that was okay in that situation. They're just protecting people from the evil police. In this case, and again, the optics here were not good for this guy, just on the safety front. But if you listen to his side of the story, and you have hundreds of people heading on private property to your home, you can understand maybe why someone was concerned. So then what happened? The pics go up. You know, this thing becomes a national story. People are tweeting it out. Here's Mark McCloskey.
Well, I've had to turn the phones off at my office. I had to come over here last night and have the office boarded up because we're getting threats against the building and everybody. It is interesting to me that the very people that are asking the mayor to resign for doxing people have now put all of my information all over the web, everywhere in the world. Is there some hypocrisy there? You know, maybe I'm missing something. But we've had to turn off our telephones here at the office because all my lines have been going continuously since I got here at 10:30 last night. I am getting thousands of emails. I'm going to have to turn off my website. It's been both threatening and encouraging because there have been a number of people who have voiced their support. But there's also been an awful lot of people who have made very direct threats of violence against me and my family.
Okay, again, that's Mark McCloskey. This is an interview that he did with Ann Allred at KSDK at Channel 5. And I want to play one more bite here because one of the things that he points out in this interview with Ann is the irony of what people are protesting, considering he's involved in civil rights cases.
There's mayhem in the city every night, and you never hear about it. There'll be dozens of shootings, multiple deaths. No one seems to care about those black lives. But you know, when there are political capital to be made from somebody's death, that death matters. No other life matters that I can see. You know, I do civil rights cases. Right now, I'm representing a young man who was assaulted by the police, who's sitting in prison right now for being involved in a car accident, after which the police came and assaulted him. It's on video. I'm not some kind of extreme, anti-Black Lives Matter guy. I do these cases. I have been doing them for decades. I mean, I have on the wall of my conference room, I've got an anti-slavery broadsheet, a abolitionist broadsheet from 1832. It's been there as long as I've owned this building. I mean, I am not the enemy of people that really care about black lives. I'm apparently the enemy of the terrorists and the Marxists that are running this organization.
Yeah, that's interesting. By the way, here's the problem for Mark McCloskey outside of what he did with waving the guns. If you listen to the beginning of that soundbite there, he committed one of the biggest sins that you can commit in the aftermath of George Floyd's death. And I would expect that the phone lines will be tied up even more, because if you heard what he said, he sort of said all lives matter. He sort of said we have carnage on the streets of St. Louis each and every night. And we don't hear anything about it because there's no political point to make. You can't say that, Mr. McCloskey. You should know better than that. You are a racist for even thinking such words. We already knew. Yeah, I mean, we already knew you were a racist because you went out there with your guns against the white protesters. So now, good Lord, dude. Godspeed. 2:16. We're off and running here for a Monday edition of the show. The president has told his advisors that he realizes that he might be losing this presidential race. Josh Krasauer on that. Missouri State Senator Bob Onder is going to join me. He was just a witness in a case that resulted in a federal judge blocking COVID-19 restrictions on religious services. And then I mentioned that, you know, the event at Art Hill with the St. Louis statue, Bill Hennessey is going to run that down a little bit later this afternoon as well. So we got a lot to come to, a lot to get to. We'll touch on that St. Louis statue with a descendant of the man who created the King Louis, the nice statue at Art Hill. So that's coming up at 3:30 this afternoon.
You're listening to The Mark Reardon Show.
When you're out of my sight, you must constantly Twitter me exactly what you're up to.
Follow Mark on Twitter at Mark Reardon, KMOX.
By the way, did you hear the guy that voiced Cleveland is no longer going to do it because he was white and Cleveland is not white? It keeps happening. So the Supreme Court today provided a victory for abortion rights activists. They struck down that Louisiana law that would have left the state with only one abortion clinic. And it was John Roberts who joined the court's liberals in the 5-4 decision. This is CBS News legal analyst Jonathan Turley.
This is a good example of John Roberts, the institutionalist. He is someone not comfortable with the court dictating sweeping changes. This would have been a critical moment. Many have argued that the best way to attack the legacy of Roe v. Wade is to chip away at the edges, to impose these types of limitations on hospitals and doctors.
Josh Krasauer with us this afternoon, political editor for the National Journal. We'll talk about that case and some of the other things that's going on. Hello, Josh. How are you? Welcome back.
Hey, not bad. Good to be back on the show, Mark.
Let's get your reaction first to the Supreme Court case, because obviously some head shaking on the conservative side the last couple of weeks with some of these decisions.
Yeah, the politics of this is really fascinating, because one of the Trump cards, if you will, for the president's reelection campaign is the fact that he appointed Gorsuch, he appointed Kavanaugh, and that would lead to a permanent conservative majority on the court. And what we're seeing now is that that's no guarantee, with Roberts looking like the real swing voters lean to the left in this Supreme Court cycle. So, you know, one worry that Republicans are having is that, just like in 2016 when Trump got a lot of conservatives to turn out, out of fear that the court would move left, you could see the opposite in 2020, where conservatives stay home, worried and dissatisfied that the president's promise of a conservative court moving rightward would not be that the promise would not be lived up to.
So Politico came out with a story over the weekend, and it said, look, the president's aware that he's losing in some of these states that matter right now. What level of awareness do you think he has, and what's going on in this campaign right now? Because obviously, in the aftermath of Tulsa, that was a big embarrassment. There was the issue from the weekend with the you know, the video that got out there on Twitter. So there's unforced errors that the president continues to make. Meantime, Joe Biden is just sort of sitting on the sidelines. So where are we left right now in the summer of 2020 when it comes to this presidential race?
Yeah, it's a big lead for Joe Biden. And as you said, Trump is shooting himself in the foot day after day. I think the biggest worrisome sign for that Tulsa rally was that, you know, they pledged that this place was going to be jammed. There would be people outside watching the president on the live screen. And instead, you had, you know, thousands of empty seats. And you've seen polls, too, the Fox News poll, the New York Times poll, that show that Trump is actually losing support, softening support among groups that you would think would be locked into his campaign, rural voters, evangelical voters, even some conservatives, and not hitting the margins that he needs to have a chance at reelection. So there are a lot of red flags waving across the country. And the fact that the president's campaign is actually spending money in Georgia, Ohio, and Iowa. These are states that he won comfortably in 2016. There are a lot of polls showing he's either tied or trailing in all three of them. Not a good sign for the president.
It isn't a good sign, but, you know, you look at summer 2016 and things were not looking very good at that point. And then I'm hearing from more and more people on the left. I got a text last night from a liberal friend that said this PCBS, and he spelled out the word, is going to cost us the election. There's a lot of people who I might describe as sane people on the left who aren't anarchists and radicals and don't want to defund the police. And they're concerned because, let's face it, Josh, and maybe this is only going to happen in the states that Trump would lock down anyway, but there's going to be, depending on what happens with the culture war, and there's so many other factors that play into this as well with COVID, but there are going to be people that are going to sit back and say, man, maybe I need to hold my nose again.
Well, the difference between 2016 and 2020 is that Trump was the challenger running against two terms of Democratic rule. Now he's the incumbent, and he's the buck stops with the boss. The buck stops at the top. So the dynamic is a little different. Undecided voters are more likely to break against the incumbent or against the party in power. The one silver lining I think the president has is that, you know, I look at some of the polling on a lot of the cultural issues, you know, Black Lives Matter, policing, racial issues. It does seem like there's been so much of a shift. I have a hard time believing that public opinion has shifted so significantly in a period of time. And you hear all these race verbal or risk jobs of it, you know, that's not public threat. I imagine there's some people that don't want to tell pollsters what they really think, what's really on their mind. So, you know, I think there may be, you know, you may want to, you know, look at some of the polling, maybe give Trump a point or two, given that environment out there. But look, when you're down 12 points, 14 points, that doesn't cover, you know, any kind of discrepancies or any kind of maybe people trying to say one thing to the pollsters in a very fraught political moment.
Yeah.
You know, you're down double digits. That's a big deficit.
I would say, too, but, you know, like even in Wisconsin, there's a poll out, and all these polls tend to have some biases. The Marquette poll has Biden up 8. A Trafalgar Group poll, which I think does lean more Republican, doesn't it? That's a Republican polling firm, has Trump up 1. So it's interesting because there's a big variety in some of these polling data as well. All right, so are we going to see, I'll let you go on this, are we going to see one pitch in Major League Baseball this year? What's your confidence level?
Yes, I'm not confident about the broader health of the sport because you may have another season of empty stadiums and then you still don't have a labor deal for the sport. So I'm Not they should have had this done weeks ago. We should be playing baseball now. I will be excited about the ESPN opener, Yankees Nationals, Garrett Cole and new Yankee against most likely Max Scherzer. That's going to be must-see TV. I haven't been able to watch sports for months, and I'm going to be tuned in, glued to the TV, savoring every pitch I can watch. But look, you never know with the pandemic, you know, things could get worse. You never know if the season's going to be fully played. And there's just so many uncertainties with sports in general. I'm just going to be glad for whatever kind of baseball I'll be able to see this season.
Yeah, no, I'm with you too, and I'm hoping that we're going to get there. I just have my worries just about all sports, just because of the virus right now. Josh, great to have you on. Appreciated as always, and we'll talk soon. Have a great 4th of July if you're allowed to celebrate our nation's independence. I'm a little unclear on whether or not you're allowed to, but you may want to check that out and get back to me. We'll talk soon.
Thanks, Mark. We'll see you soon.
All right. Take care. We got the news with Carol coming up next.
News Radio 1120 KMOX, the voice of the Cardinals.
All right, welcome back. It is 2:36, and I mentioned, you know, as we started the show, there's a couple of different stories here that St. Louis is getting attention for, the Central West End protests with the gun-toting liberals, and also the situation with the St. Louis statue. And, you know, I think there's a couple of different sides to both of those stories. Bill Hennessy is going to join me here in just a couple of minutes to talk about the situation with the St. Louis statue. He was one of the protest organizers of that, I believe. He's coming up in a couple of minutes. Dr. Bob Onder, Senator Bob Onder, is with me this afternoon. He reached out over the weekend. I was unaware of his involvement in a case that had some national implications. Bob, how are you?
I'm doing well, Mark. Good to be on.
Before I get you on this case that we're going to talk about, what is your prevailing opinion right now of the virus?
Well, Mark, I really do think that, at least here in the state of Missouri, I do think we are on the downslope. We do have things under control. I just looked at Missouri's COVID dashboard last night, and hospitalizations have leveled off and have been going down, albeit slowly, since early to mid-April. And deaths from COVID-19 in Missouri have been on that downside of the bell-shaped curve and are way down low on that low side of the bell-shaped curve. Really, the worst seems to be behind us. Now, as we test more, we will see more cases. But I think as long as we have a handle on hospitalizations, we're not seeing deaths climb. I think Missouri has definitely done the right thing to reopen.
Yeah, I think you're right about that. And we're seeing some concerning things nationally, but I would completely agree with you. Now, this sort of brings us to this case. There was a federal judge that ruled on some of Governor Cuomo's coronavirus-fueled restrictions on religious institutions, was unaware until you pointed out that you were actually a witness in that case, right?
I was, Mark. I was wearing my physician hat, my medical expert hat, as opposed to my state senate hat. I spent Father's Day working on an affidavit in this lawsuit. In this lawsuit, U.S. District Judge Gary Sharp in New York ruled that Governor Andrew Cuomo and Mayor Bill de Blasio had exceeded their executive authority by really drastically limiting religious worship services, and at the same time not only allowing businesses with just as many or sometimes far more people conduct their business, but also condoning and even participating in mass protests in which tens of thousands of folks came outside and definitely exceeded the 10-person limit, some wearing masks, some not. But to pick between winners and losers, to on the one hand exercise, as the lawyer in the case said, absolute monarchy on the pretext of public health on the one hand, and then tolerating tens of thousands of protesters on the other hand, that was really a bridge too far for the judge, and he ruled that the religious gathering restrictions had to be loosened.
Did you have to be a judge to really make the ruling in that case? Because isn't it sort of, obviously, I understand that the law is very particular and that's what you have to base these things on, but that was sort of common sense to a certain extent, wasn't it?
Well, it really was. It really was. The irony is that, so the plaintiffs in this case were two Catholic priests and three worshipers at an Orthodox Jewish synagogue. And the irony is right across from the synagogue, which was pretty much shut down, there was a coffee shop that was packed every day. And so what ended up happening is those who were politically less favored by Mayor de Blasio, like the Orthodox Jewish community, were threatened, were shut down. In one case, a park that was frequent in a Hasidic Jewish neighborhood that the children and their moms would go to every day was welded shut. The gate was welded shut. At the same time, tens of thousands were out protesting. It's just the height of hypocrisy, Mark.
This is a good line from the ruling. The judge wrote this: Governor Cuomo and Mayor de Blasio could have just as easily discouraged protests short of condemning their message in the name of public health and exercised discretion to suspend enforcement for public safety reasons instead of encouraging what they knew was a flagrant disregard of the outdoor limits and social distancing rules. They could have easily been silent. By acting as they did, Governor Cuomo and Mayor de Blasio sent a clear message that the mass protests are deserving of preferential treatment. I think that was important that the judge said that. I mean, to a lot of us, it was very noticeable. I hope that maybe that gets quoted a little bit when it comes to the spiking COVID numbers.
Well, yeah, I think that is right. Look, if either outdoor gatherings, mass outdoor gatherings, are safe or they're not, but to say that the churches cannot go outside to have worship services, that mothers cannot bring their children to the local park, and yet it's okay for tens of thousands of politically favored protesters to gather as they wish. That's just the height of hypocrisy, and it really is a violation of our First Amendment, which guarantees freedom of worship.
Before I let you go, I got 2 minutes. Curious about your response to the Supreme Court decision today.
Yeah, Mark, I was deeply disappointed. Over the years, I have been involved in clinic health and safety regulations that are designed to protect the health and safety of Missouri women. I was involved in 2017 and then again in 2019. And it is deeply disappointing to see the Supreme Court side with the radical pro-abortion left and really say that sensible requirements that doctors have admitting privileges at hospitals, which every ambulatory surgery center has, it's just really 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 appalling to me.
Bob, Joe Biden issued a statement that said Republicans in the state legislatures will stop at nothing to get rid of Roe, and we have to be just as strong in our defense of it. The problem is it was a Democratic representative, Katrina Jackson, who sponsored that bill in Louisiana, and a Democrat governor who signed it. So Uncle Joe didn't
You're right about that, Mark. And I would point out to you, over since 1973, many of Missouri's pro-life laws have been sponsored and voted for by Democrats. When I was in the Missouri House 10 years ago, I served with over half a dozen pro-life Democrats. It's really the Democrat Party that has become so radically pro-abortion that they've pushed pro-lifers out of their party.
Bob Onder, I appreciate it. Got to run to something else here this afternoon, Senator, but I appreciate you checking in with me over the weekend. Glad we got you on here on this Monday afternoon.
Thank you, Mark. Always a pleasure.
We'll come back. Bill Hennessy, he was one of the original founders of the Tea Party many years ago. He helped organize that event on Saturday at Art Hill, Catholics praying to keep the statue of King Louis IX in place. We'll talk about it next with Bill on KMOX.
St. Louis's traffic station, KMOX.
Well, unfortunately, we're in the national news once again for a variety of reasons. The couple in the West End and also this situation, and maybe this should get more attention, though, with the King Louis statue at Art Hill. We'll talk about that a little bit more in the next hour as well with a descendant of the man who created the statue. But Bill Hennessy is with me this afternoon, part of the Catholics who are praying to keep the statue in place. Bill, first of all, Bill, great to have you back. You're one of the organizers here, right?
Yes, I to a degree. There are several groups that are praying at the statue of St. Louis right now. So I was with one of several groups.
So we covered this. Kevin Killeen was out there last week, and I covered it a little bit on Thursday. I had a conversation with him about this, and obviously things blew up over the weekend. So from your perspective, sort of, let's just start with share the story.
Sure. You know, I'm a Catholic, and we have a strong tradition of monuments because they are guideposts in our journey through life of what has come before. They remind us, they give us examples, both good and bad, of how humanity has tried to do things before and what were the results. I personally believe that St. Louis's example, with his charity, with his work in hospitals, with his reforms of the French government, with just incredible life example. This is a king who brought beggars into his palace and fed them up to 100 every night, washed their feet before they left. He, the king, got on his knees and washed the feet of homeless beggars before they left the palace. It's just a remarkable example. And the beauty of monuments is that people see it and say, who is that? And they find out more about him. And they realize that even if I'm not a king, there are things that I can do to make life better for the people around me. That example of humility, no matter who you are, no matter how high up on the ladder you climb, you still have the ability to humble yourself and help your fellow man. What a shining example. Those monuments go away. We lose that. Someone is going to get lost in lack of humility and thinking that they're above everything else without examples like St. Louis. So we went out to pray to not only pray for intercession to preserve that monument, but also as an example of following St. Louis, of being humble, of praying for everyone who was there on whatever their feelings are, whether they want to tear it down or educate people about the life of St. Louis. That we're all fighting the same battle to get through life best we can, and we wanted to bear witness to that.
Okay, so then, look, you got this guy that likes to stir up trouble. I've made fun of him for years. His name is Brent Lee. He goes by Umar Lee. I don't even know why the Post-Dispatch gives him attention, Bill. He's a troublemaker. So who was the instigator, and how did this kind of turn ugly on Saturday?
I wasn't there when it turned ugly. So we left about 1 o'clock, and I believe that the violence started after around 2 o'clock. So I wasn't there. When it was easy to see how it could, though, because when we started praying, the focus came to us. There was constant shouting. There was attempts to draw us out of prayer and into a confrontation or argument with the folks who were there with Brent Lee. And at the time that we left, we hadn't engaged. We were very focused on our purpose, which was to pray and sing some hymns and say some prayers and leave. We did what we came to do. So I don't know how it lasted, except that, you know, the longer people are around and taunting, the more the higher emotions climb. And I think
mean,
that
I guess...
some of it was the fact that we wouldn't engage. So I think there was the fact that we would not engage, I think, angered some of the people who were trying to get us to.
So, you know, look, these are pictures that are circulating. They're on the internet. There's been some news coverage. But as you know, Bill, the big story today is the protesters who went into the Central West End to protest the mayor. And there's two gun-toting Democrats that are making the national news. One of my questions, rhetorically, if you will, has been, why in the world, when you see, you know, older white gentlemen getting beat up and other people on Saturday, why wouldn't there be a little attention given to this and just the nature of the protest? But of course, that once again would be too much to expect, wouldn't it?
Yes, it would, and it doesn't fit the preferred narrative of the national news media.
By the way, as we were doing this interview, I just see this, maybe this came out earlier, that Princeton's going to remove Woodrow Wilson's name from the school. So this is going to continue. Let me get your thoughts on this before I let you go, too, because, sure. Look, the culture war is real. It's at a tipping point right now. How does this affect the politics of the day?
Boy, that's a good question. And I think it's going to be hard to see how it shakes out for a little while. I think it's going to be a couple of months before we see where this goes. A lot of people, I suspect, feel inadequate to jump into this debate right now, or they feel threatened that they're going to suffer some sort of retaliation if they voice an opinion. And I don't necessarily think that's a bad thing. In our social media 24-hour news cycle world, I think we are often too quick to respond to events that are occurring based on our own experience and prejudices and biases and everything else. And it makes sense to get a little bit more information and find out what the real story is before we jump to conclusions and start assessing blame and vindication.
Yeah, well, that makes too much sense, though. You can't have something like that because, and again, the media wants to jump on. I'll offer what happened a week ago with Bubba Wallace as an example of jumping on a story without knowing all the facts and actually trying to find out whether or not there's different context or other questions. So, look, I appreciate coming on here and give me a little background of what happened and how the protests went down. Is that group still there then at the statue continuously or during regular protesting hours?
There's a group called St. Louis Forever, which is another Catholic group that we were not a part of. I was with Jim Hoff, but they are there every evening at 6:30 to clean the statue and to say the rosary. So that's an ongoing mission every evening at 6:30.
Bill Hennessy, great to have you back on. Awesome to hook up with you. I appreciate the information.
Same here. Thank you, Mark.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
O'Reilly Auto Parts.